Buddy Guy on Tavis Smiley and sounding good. Love me some Buddy Guy. In this hour, longtime architecture critic Lee Bay joins us with an update on the Obama Presidential Center under construction now on the south side of Chicago. There has been significant controversy around the site of the 19-acre campus in historic Jackson Park. The project scheduled now to be completed by spring 2026, we shall see. But we'll download you right now on the progress of what's being planned now that we're joined by longtime architecture critic Lee Bay. Lee, how are you today?
Doing well, my friend. How about you?
Man, if I complained, I'd be an ingrate. It's good to hear your voice. Good to have you on. And glad we got an hour to talk about a few things here regarding architecture, not just in Chicago, but we'll talk about that bridge in Baltimore and all the foolishness. People suggesting that the bridge failed because of DE&I. I literally heard Wes Moore say yesterday, the governor of Maryland, I ain't got time for foolishness. And he didn't even respond to that particular question. But the fact that people would even make an argument like that, that a bridge failed and people died because of DE&I, is insane to me. But I love architecture, and I'm delighted to have you on to talk about it. Let me just start, for those in the national audience who have not been following this per se, that is to say the library on the south side. I mentioned moments ago that this was initially rooted in some pretty serious controversy. Remind the audience or share with the audience what that controversy was when this thing was first suggested.
Well, you know, the biggest controversy probably is the location that was selected, which is in Jackson Park, right across, if you know Chicago, from the Museum of Science and Industry, right where the kind of Hyde Park, you know, predominantly white liberal University of Chicago neighborhood, and Woodlawn, predominantly black neighborhood, kind of where they meet. It's a historic park by Frederick Law Olmsted, and there is a lot of angst, even now, still lawsuits settled and potential new ones being filed. Probably won't go anywhere over the building of that site.
And what's the protestation about? What are the grievances?
Well, you know, the grievances are that they could have picked another site, that this was a historic park. I mean, Washington, Jackson Park, you know, it's a nationally known historic park, not unlike in terms of prestige, Grant Park, you know, in in Chicago, you know, downtown. Or even it's in a class, in a way, of even Central Park in New York. I mean,
let me cut in right quick for those who don't know Chicago. But you saw all those Bulls championships. That's always in Grant Park where they have those celebrations. It's also the place where Obama went the night he was elected. Correct?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Grant Park is. Yep. But Jackson Park is close to Hyde Park, where his political and educational roots are in terms of him teaching at University of Chicago, and not too far from where he did from other parts of the South Side, a little further south, where he did his early organizing. And of course, maybe 2 miles from where Michelle Obama was raised. So you know, there's a reason why they picked that site.
Yep. How did the president, former president now, and the first lady, former first lady, navigate the controversy? And there are a lot of black folk who are upset about this. How did they navigate the controversy around this son of Chicago coming back home to build this presidential library, but people are pushing back against him, born of the location they chose? How did he navigate that controversy? To your mind, at least.
You know, it was a tricky walk, but they did well. I mean, obviously, because the thing is being built.
Yeah.
You know, there's another part of the controversy, which is the Woodlawn neighborhood, again, predominantly African-American, wanted a community development, a community benefits agreement. They're fearful that this $700-800 million project could force drive up real estate prices, which it kind of almost is, but those things were happening beforehand. And they wanted something out of it. They didn't want to be displaced. So for that part of it, the president, former president will come back to Chicago and, you know, and basically say, you know me, I'm not going to leave you in a lurch over all this. He's also got Valerie Jarrett, which you might remember, another daughter of Chicago who worked in his administration, who, for better or for worse, you know, sat down and heard and listened to these complaints. While on the other side, the location side, you know, that becomes really a law question. You know, can they build on public land? How can they build on public land? That kind of thing. So the lawyers kind of took care and fought that part.
Yeah, I don't think these lawsuits are over, but to your point, it's being constructed. And so the Obama Library, the Obama Presidential Center, to be more exact, is tracking toward completion. We're talking with longtime Chicago architecture critic Lee Bay about that and a great deal more. I've got questions for Lee about the center, more questions in that regard. We'll talk about this bridge in speaking of architecture, this bridge in Baltimore that folk on the right now are blaming its collapse on DE&I, which is completely stuck on stupid, as far as I'm concerned. We'll talk about the Chicago skyline, which I think, I get in trouble every time I say this, but I like the Chicago skyline better than New York. That's just me. We can debate that. A lot more to talk about in this hour with Lee Bay when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
Interrogating and unpacking.
That's what we do around here.
You're listening to Tavis Smiley. Smiley. Hard talk for curious people just like you.
Just like you.
You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Smiley. Tavis Smiley and longtime architecture critic Lee Bay. So, Lee, speaking of the Obama Presidential Center, this is radio, obviously, and so we can't see this. We can't see the renderings. But give me in the audience some sense, as best you can, as what's going to ultimately appear on this 17, 18, 19-acre site.
Well, the largest thing, the most dominant thing, and you can see it now, is the Presidential Center's museum, which is a 235-foot tall tower, which is obviously prominently on the site. There's also a forum building. There's, for instance, towards the southern end of the site, there is like a community athletic center called Home Court. So there's a collection of these buildings, but there are also gardens planned, park space planned. The idea, at least, and we'll see what it turns out to be, is that the park space that is lost from this that they begin to put some of it back. There was a road that once ran on the eastern side of the property. That road will disappear and be replaced by parkland and garden space. So the idea is that it'll occupy garden space, park space, but it'll also add some too.
Yep. And none of us are surprised who know Barack Obama that he built a sports complex with a basketball court in it for him and his friends to play basketball. an official NBA size court is inside this building called Home Court. So the president would not have his own gym he ain't got to go to what's it called? East West Gym? Is that it? The East West Gym in Chicago?
Maybe East Bank Club.
Bank Club. Yeah. Uh-huh. He ain't got to go there no more. He can go to his own court. Yeah, when this is built, I ain't mad at him. We should all have the resources to build our own NBA size court to play basketball whenever we want to. Again, I ain't mad at the former president for that. The question that you raised earlier that I want to come back to is what impact ultimately this is going to have on the neighborhood. On the one hand, you have to celebrate the fact, again, that this son of Chicago has come back home, is coming back home to build this presidential center. On the other hand, one cannot ignore the concerns of the surrounding community. And one would think that, at least financially, it would have a positive impact on the surrounding community. It's going to raise, you know, again, if you're a property owner, it's good for you. It's raising the value of your property. And I would think that whatever surrounds it would benefit from increased spending as visitors come into that area to visit this museum in the years to come. But you tell me, on balance, whether or not the people in the surrounding communities think that the impact on this community will be positive or negative in the future.
You know, that all depends on a couple of things. It depends on the city's response to this investment, right? I mean, there's a street, 63rd Street, as famous as 47th Street in terms of, you know, Chicago, you know, core Chicago streets that are ours, that belong to Black folk, right? And 63rd Street has taken a lot of hits over the past decades. Was almost vacant from Stony Island, which is abuts this presidential center, all the way past Cottage Grove and beyond. Those spots are beginning to be filled in. It's up to the city urban planners, getting with developers to kind of restore, to take the advantage of that, to restore more parts of 63rd Street outside of the presidential library, obviously, but can feed on feed into it. There are a lot of vacant lots, residential vacant lots in Woodlawn, although they're beginning to be expensive and dry up now. How the city moves in with affordable housing that it builds or incentivizes, all of that, you know, becomes really important. When it comes to the library itself, is it an asset? That's a matter of programming, right? Mm-hmm. To make sure that there's enough programming there that's there for the public. I mean, the center that we talked about, the home base, home court center, we joke about it being his basketball court, but it's intended to be something that the community can use and have gatherings in. Same with the parks and open space they're planning. It'll be on the grounds of the presidential center, but the idea is that it'll be open to the public. So that's where it really becomes. You know, without that, without aggressive programming, and without the city saying, hey, listen, let's see if we can take a layup, you know, handoff from this presidential center to do some things equitably in Woodlawn and along 63rd, without those things happening, then it becomes an exclusive club for whomever.
Yeah.
But with those things happening and the community pushing for those things to happen, then it has the potential to really become this asset that they want it to be.
Yep. I don't know if you know anything about this, Lee, but he's been on my program a few times, and he's a personal and dear friend of mine. But Harry Lennix, the great actor from Chicago, is working on a project not too far from this presidential center. You know about this project as well?
Oh, yeah. He took an old warehouse building on Cottage Grove, west of there, but not terribly far away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is good. These cultural links that places like Woodlawn used to have slowly began to come back, and that's good to see. So I'm excited about what Brother Lennox is doing there, because it, along with perhaps if you're familiar with D'Astor Gates' work,
sure.
A little bit along 55th, so I guess it's a little not too far from there. These kind of artistic and cultural interventions coming back into the community are great, and the library would do well, the presidential center would do well to kind of play off these things and create relationships with these places.
I'm blanking on a name right now, but before I do that, though, let me just say again how much I love Harry Lennix. I'm delighted that this cultural space that he's building there, again, not too far from the Obama Presidential Center. So these black folk in Chicago are doing their thing, as they always have. And speaking of black folk in Chicago, I'm blanking on her name right now, but I had her as a guest on this program a few months ago when she ascended to the position. But the head of the AIA, the first time ever, is a black woman. You know what I'm talking about? She's based in Chicago there. Her name will come to me. I'll find it. Miles, we'll find
it's,
it.
It's Kim.
We'll find her name, but I want to just. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Lee.
No, I'm embarrassed because I know her and I'm blanking out.
Now we'll find it. The head of the AIA, and here's the point: the AIA is the institution for architects in this country, and they've been around for hundreds of years, and they have never had an African American woman lead the AIA, and it was a really, really big deal a few months ago when it was announced that she'd be. Kim Dowdell is her name. Yeah,
that's right.
So a shout out to Kim and all those listening on VON who know Kim in Chicago right now. Tell her we gave her a shout out today as the sister who is now the head of AIA. And that's a really big deal. When you think about, and I'll get Lee's take on this in a moment, when you think about how white, how lily white and how white male the world of architecture is in this country, for a black woman to now be leading the AIA is a really big deal. And the fact that she is at a firm there in Chicago, again, is just another statement about what you can do in Chicago. But when I saw that news break a few months ago, I invited her on this program. We had an amazing conversation. If you missed it, again, her name is Kim Dowdell. Check out the podcast of that conversation with this sister, who's actually from Detroit, as I recall, but lives in Chicago and with a major firm there. But for her to have ascended to the leadership of this institution, this organization, after all all these many years is a really big deal. Which leads me down this particular path, Lee Bay. I want to talk in a moment about how you fell in love with architecture. I love architecture, as I said at the top of the hour. I'm a big fan of it. And here's a funny story. When I was in college at Indiana University, grew up in the Midwest, spent a lot of time in Chicago, got tons of friends there. But when I was a student at Indiana University, it just so happened that my roommate and the guy who I pledged with, we were online together. His name is Kai, last name Blackburn. His father is a well-known, God rest his soul, father was a well-known black architect. He designed the Freedom Center, the Underground Railroad Museum in Cincinnati, and some other things that Walter Blackburn did during his lifetime. But his son, Kai Blackburn, was my college roommate. And I hadn't ever even really thought about architecture. I mean, obviously I'm not stupid. I'm a student at IU, but hadn't really, you know, paid attention to architecture or black architecture or anything like that. But when your roommate, has a father who's a very well-known and famous architect, you get into it. And before I knew it, Lee, I had subscribed to Architecture Digest. And all these years later, I still subscribe to Architecture Digest because I love the field. I love the passion, the energy. I love the beauty of it. And as fate would have it, I ended up designing a house here in L.A., the office building that I sit in right now, I helped to design. We built this building from the ground up where I sit every day and run my company, and my studios are in this building. But that is how much I fell in love with architecture. I say all that to say I'm curious as to your backstory as a black man, how you fell in love with architecture and much less become an architecture critic.
Well, you know, it's an interesting story. I mean, you know, the first part of it is, you know, living in Chicago, as you know, as when you visited, in any great city in America, but especially Chicago, it kind of comes in a mother's milk. You know, you go downtown, particularly, I'm 58, so you know, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, but you go downtown, there's Sears Tower, there's John Hancock Building, these world-famous buildings, and they're just there for you, they're just there to look at, right? And then out in the neighborhoods, I mean, these, you know, beautiful, limestone buildings, residential buildings in Bronzeville, along King Drive, you know, and it kind of gets into the skin. My introduction to architecture actually was through my father, who was a layman, you know, worked for Reynolds Aluminum, who just liked architecture. And he would take me around and, you know, we would look at buildings and I would ask him questions and he would answer what he knew. And that kind of planted the seed. Now, when I first got into journalism and then made my way to the Sun-Times, I covered crime. In fact, I was on your show like 30 years ago. Your old TV show talking about Girl X.
Oh yeah,
if you remember that. Mm-hmm. And well, right around that time that we talked, we got a new editor who liked architecture. I at the time had been covering, you know, gangs, controversy, special investigations, all kinds of stuff, and I wanted a change. So I asked for this new architecture beat, not thinking I would get it. I thought I would get something else, but it was just asking for this beat because it had no formal training in it. Asking for this beat would let the editor know that I want to do something else. He says, you write well. The beat is yours. And that's how it began. And I wrote about preservation in Bronzeville. And I liked the politics of Chicago. So the political movements that, you know, either created a building, preserved a building, or knocked down a building. You know, I kind of got all into that. And the readers responded to it, have responded to it. Mm. I left the field. Came back 20 years later, if you can believe that, and was able to pick up right back at the Sun-Times, writing about architecture once more.
I'm laughing because you started writing about crime. Yesterday, it just so happens, we had Kim Fox on the program yesterday for an hour, talking about her tenure as state's attorney there in Chicago, and what happens next was an amazing conversation with this first black woman to lead the Cook County state's attorney's office. This is the sister who was involved in the Jussie Smollett case. If you missed our conversation with Kim Fox yesterday, I encourage you to check out the podcast. It's an amazing conversation with her. And speaking of Chicago, to have started out being born in Cabrini-Green and end up being the state's attorney, the first black woman to have that position, it was quite a story. It is quite a story. And I encourage you to check out the podcast of our dialogue with Kim Fox yesterday in case you missed it. But I'm still laughing that a brother went from covering crime to covering architecture. How did you... I didn't know that's part of the backstory, Lee, but that's quite a jump, man, from crime to architecture.
Oh yeah, it's a leap. Although civil architecture is a crime, get a chance to talk about that. But you know, I was a young father then, and, yeah. and you know, had to feed the kids, right? Yeah. And so it's amazing what you can do when you got that as a when you got that at your back. You
To your point that some architecture is a crime, I'd say amen to that. I see some edifices, some structures, and I say that was a bad idea when they thought about it. So when you write a piece and you're not so kind to this architecture that is in fact a crime, how do people respond to that? Particularly those who are associated with the project.
You know to be honest. Oftentimes, well, the developers are always mad. Why did you write that?
Right.
Oftentimes, the architect will call and off the record and say, you know, you're right. You know, we tried to do this better and they wouldn't let us. So there's that. The readers like it because, you know, when you take shots at people, particularly if you do it with some humor,
yeah.
You know, it's entertaining. So they kind of like it too. It's fun. I don't get a chance to take shots. As there isn't as much bad architecture being built in Chicago now as there was in the 90s when I first started this, where you get these kind of margarine colored concrete buildings that were popping up out of nowhere north of downtown with giant parking bases at the base, and you think parking spaces at the base, you think, what the heck is this? Mm-hmm. Now it's a bit better.
Yep.
The battle is preserving the good stuff oftentimes.
Our guest is. I'm sorry. Finish your point, Lee. I'm sorry. My apologies.
No. That was it. That was it.
We're talking in this hour to architecture critic Lee Bay. We started out talking about, and we'll circle back to this. President Obama, former President Obama, is building the Obama Presidential Center. It's under construction right now. It's tracking toward completion, and just trying to get a sense of what is going to be on that site in Jackson Park, historic Jackson Park, when they finish this project. The controversy notwithstanding. When we come forward, I do want to talk about the Chicago skyline since I've got Lee on the line. And we'll talk about that bridge in Baltimore. Wes Moore ain't having it. The governor of Maryland is upset and disappointed with this suggestion that it was DE&I that brought that bridge down. A great deal more to cover with Lee Bay when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
For all the freedom-loving folk, this is Tavis Smiley.
I feel like freedom.
Let's get back to more of Tavis Smiley right now.
More of Tavis Smiley and Lee Bay right now, who is a longtime architecture critic with the Chicago Sun-Times. And we've been talking, in case you've just tuned in, about the Obama Presidential Library, a Presidential Center. I got to start calling it by its correct name, the Obama Presidential Center. It is a presidential library, but it's called the Presidential Center. In historic Jackson Park in Chicago, it's tracking toward completion. And just trying to get a sense of what we're going to be visiting in the years to come when we head to Chicago to see what the former president and first lady have built and what the legacy will be extended because of what they are building in historic Jackson Park. Speaking of heading to Chicago, I'm going to Chicago. I'll be there. I love Chicago. I'm always looking for any excuse to go to Chicago, one of my favorite American city, as my friends know. But I'll be there this summer, Lee, as the rest of the world will be, many of us will be, for the Democratic National Convention. And if you're coming to Chicago or going to Chicago this summer, for the DNC, when it comes to, I'll put you on the spot here, when it comes to taking a tour of Chicago, an architecture tour of Chicago, give me 3, 4, 5 things that you think people ought to see while we're in Chicago this summer for the convention.
Ooh, that's a tough one. Let me see. So much, you know, obviously downtown, which you'll see, obviously, because the United Center isn't that far from downtown.
Right.
I would say, you know, although I'm a Southsider, I wrote a book about the South Side, architecture of the South Side, I'd say get a chance to see some of the West Side architecture. You know, there's been a lot built. If you were here in 96 for the DNC, then it's particularly the parts of the West Side that are, you know, within a mile of downtown, mile and a half of downtown. It's a completely different place now where, you know, new buildings, office buildings, residential towers. Get out to Austin, a neighborhood, black neighborhood, predominantly black neighborhood on the far West Side near Oak Park. There's a subset of Austin called Austin Village. Some of the best late 1800, early 1900 early 1900s architecture you'll ever see. Looks like a New England town that got lost.
Mm-hmm.
I would say make your way up and down King Drive. beginning, you know, just south of downtown, and going out to Garfield Boulevard, you know, 30 blocks away or so, and see these great historic, gray stone buildings, the house that Ida B. Wells, you know, once had.
Oh yeah.
And on and on and on. You know, that those are good places to start.
Yep. You are a Chicago native, so I can probably guess what you're going to say, but let me ask anyway. When it comes to the Chicago skyline, what's your read on it, and is it better than the New York skyline?
Yeah, I'm going to say it is, at the risk of offending my New York brothers and sisters. It is, you know, and it has a lot of things going for it that created that, right? So there's the lake. So it's a three-sided downtown. So if you're coming from the south side, especially down Lakeshore Drive, the skyline just unfurls in front of you in a way that a few cities do. And so that's great. But it's also a compact downtown. So as the lake on one side, and then the river wraps around it in a way. So architects and engineers had to make the most of what's a relatively small space for a central business district. So you go up, you go high, right? And then to do that, you have to have the structural manpower—not manpower, but certainly horsepower—to build a tall building, and that of course brings ingenuity into the mix. Lastly, the political piece. I mean, for most of its existence, Chicago, particularly the 20th century and to the 21st, Chicago has had mayors that cared about downtown. They saw the maybe almost too much, almost to the neglect of the neighborhood.
Yeah.
But they felt that investment downtown would lift the whole city. So the Daleys, both the old man and the Richard M. Daley, Rahm Emanuel to an extent, all these people put investments into downtown, encouraged developers and commercial interest to do so, but also built Millennium Park, the Riverwalk, all these kind of things. All of this makes this city's downtown a good one.
Yeah, a couple of things popped in my head while you were talking. Let me process through them right quickly. Number one, when you said they had to go high, since we were talking about the Obamas earlier, you said the word high. My mind went straight to Michelle Obama. Remember that line, when they go low, we go high, in her famous speech? I'm still not sure I agree with Michelle on that one. Sometimes when they go low, you got to get low with them. But I understand what she was. It's aspirational. I understand what she was trying to say, that when they go low, we go high. It got applause, but I'm not sure, Michelle Obama, that I'm with you on that one. Not all the time. When they get low, sometimes you got to get down with them. As my granddad once told me, when you get down, but he's how do you put it, Tavis? You got to get down where you get mad. You got to get down right where you get mad. So when they go low, sometimes you got to go low with them. With all due respect to the former First Lady, Michelle Obama, that popped in my head when you mentioned they had to go high for some reason, since we're talking about the Obamas in Chicago. The other thing that popped in my mind, though, speaking of architecture, and I want to work my way into your book about architecture on the South Side, for one particular reason, because when we think about the South Side of Chicago, it too often gets maligned for all the obvious reasons, as you know, in the national press. What I love about your book is that it went into the architecture, the beauty of the South Side. And it's not just the South Side of Chicago, but all around the country, there are black neighborhoods that have amazing and beautiful architecture that for years have been overlooked, not given the respect that these buildings and institutions deserve. And so that's why I love your book. It reminds us that even in black spaces, there is beauty. There's architectural genius, artistic genius. And I want to talk about that in just a moment here. But before I do that, looking at my clock here, I want to just say, speaking of architecture, that as long as he lived, I would never come to Chicago without going to the Johnson Building to have lunch with John H. Johnson. I miss him dearly all these years later. I was honored to be one of the three eulogists at his funeral there in Chicago, of course. But I love that Johnson Building. What I love more is the story of how he got that building built. I mean, segregation and racism was so strong when he became the first and only black person to own a high-rise tower right there in Michigan, on Michigan, with all those beautiful structures. But I just want to shout out just give a brief tribute to John H. Johnson, not just for what he did with regard to Ebony and Jet, but what he did putting a black-owned tower on that main street on Michigan, that avenue in Chicago, Libe.
Oh, that's one of the great Chicago stories. I mean, as I tell people, you know, as Central Station, this was like our Ellis Island, where the Illinois Central brought us up from down south to Chicago. I mean, imagine, as I say in the book, you know, you're on a plow or you're stuck in some kitchen down south. You catch the train to Chicago, and within a day's time, you're standing in the in what was then the ninth largest economy in the world. Mm-hmm. People say, well, why black folks come to Chicago? Why they come to the north? That's the reason why.
Yep.
So as that building at Roosevelt, Michigan, is coming down, yep, closing out and beginning to come down, you know, what that building wrought is a kind of embodied in Johnson's building, designed by black architect John Matusamy, local
right.
man.
That's right.
Here. And very briefly, people lose track of what a happening that was when that building opened. Everybody who was anybody in the entertainment world, business world, wanted to see that building in those early days, including John Lennon and Yoko Ono. Henry Fonda came to check it out. Ozzie Davis and Ruby Dee. So this was quite the thing. And unfortunately, you know, Ebony is no longer there. It got sold. The building is apartments now, so they kept a little bit of the vibe on the inside.
Yep.
And then now probably it's going to be sold again. So we lose that. But we have to remember that we had that as well.
Oh, yeah. No, it was quite a story. And he had to get a white man to pose and stand in for him to even buy the land, much less to build the edifice. And the story of how he got that driveway on Michigan. In fact, I'll tell that story when we come forward. It's an amazing story. Speaking of architecture, I'm sure Lee knows the story, but I'll tell it. This building that Mr. Johnson built, the only black man to own a high-rise on Michigan Avenue in Chicago, also is the only building that has a driveway off of Michigan. It's a fascinating story about the brilliance of black people. I'll tell it when we come forward with Lee Bay on Tavis Smiley.
From the Mert Park with love, love this love. Is Tavis Smiley. He's rooting for everybody black.
Everybody black. Black.
More of Tavis Smiley coming your way right now. Right now.
I'm watching my time, Lee Bay, and I can't do justice to this story, although Mr. Johnson told it to me 1,000 times, because every time I saw him and I went to the top of the Johnson building to have lunch with him, again, I would never go to Chicago without spending some time with Mr. Johnson. Love that, brother. I'd ask him to tell me these stories over and over. He said, Tavis, I told you them stories 1,000 times. I said, tell me one more time, Mr. Johnson. And he would tell me these stories. If you can get a copy of his book called Succeeding Against the Odds, it's one of the best memoirs I've ever read, Succeeding Against the Odds, the book by John H. Johnson, how he started Ebony and Jet and got his mother to mortgage her furniture for $500. And with that $500, all he bought was stamps, envelopes, and paper. And he wrote a letter that said, a friend of mine told me that you're the kind of discerning Negro who would love to read a magazine that talks about the exploits and the accomplishments of black people. And if you're one of those persons, send me back $2 for a year-long subscription, and I'll send you my magazine when it's published. He hadn't printed nothing yet, but he sent that list out. He got thousands of dollars that came back his way, and that's how he started Ebony and Jet magazines. But he got his mama to mortgage the only thing she owned for $500, and he literally sent out letters with that $500, and the rest, as they say, is history. And he became a huge and very successful businessman. But I love the backstory of John H. Johnson. He becomes so successful that he wants to build this tower. He has this dream to build a tower on Michigan Avenue with all that richness, all the stores, all the iconic buildings that Lee mentioned earlier. He wanted to build his own tower right on Michigan Avenue. He had to get a white guy to buy the land to build the building because they wouldn't let Negroes anywhere near Michigan Avenue back in the day. He builds this building, and as the architects are designing the building, and you mentioned the architect, black architect, as they're trying to design this building, Mr. Johnson had early on arthritis. And Chicago gets bitterly cold. That's why they call it the Windy City, right there on the lakefront. It gets bitterly cold, and he was trying to figure out a way to build a underground garage in the Johnson building. Long story short, you can't do that. The traffic on Michigan is so backed up already. It's so bad even back then. You cannot have a driveway entrance off of Michigan Avenue because it backs up the traffic. There is no building on Michigan Avenue that has one of those driveways. It's part of the city ordinance. You can't do it. Mr. Johnson asked to see a copy of the ordinance. They sent it to him. He read that thing over and over and over again. He talked to old man Daly, the mayor, to say, Mr. Daly, can't you make an exception for me? He said, John, I can't do it. Nobody else has an entrance off of Michigan, and you can't have one either. He studied that ordinance over and over and over again. And what he finally realized, Lee Bay, as you know, he read the fine print. It said you cannot have an entrance off of Michigan Avenue. It did not say you could not have an exit off of Michigan Avenue. And he found that loophole, and the Johnson Building for all these years is still the only building on Michigan Avenue with a driveway off of Michigan Avenue. I digress. That's the brilliance of a black man named John H. Johnson who never went to college. Our remaining moments with Lee Bay when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
Unapologetically progressive. Unapologetically black. You're tapped into Tavis Smiley. Tavis Smiley.
If you was
Ohio. More honesty than you can handle.
More empowerment than you can imagine.
You're tuned in to Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley and longtime Chicago architecture critic Lee Bay. Got less than 5 minutes here. I want to cover a couple things with Lee now that I've shared that story that I promised I'd share about Mr. Johnson. What an amazing genius he was. Two things, Lee, in these few minutes. The architecture that you talk about in your book on the south side of Chicago really is a frame not just for discussing architecture on the black side, the south side of Chicago, but across the country. I worry that in these black spaces, the architecture that exists there doesn't get the respect or attention it deserves.
Well, it's really the case, and it's a tough thing, and I wrestled with this while writing the book. I wanted to lift up this architecture. But then I was fearful that if it got too much attention, then the kind of the forces of gentrification could slip in and displace people. Right. Not that one book could do that, but I didn't want to be a part of a string that ends up doing that. Mm-hmm. But also wanted to explain that when you see neighborhoods that are, you know, not doing as well as they oughta, that there are financial forces beyond the scope of the people who live there that contribute to that. Like, for instance, how appraisers will underappraise homes in black areas. So I had to get all that in there. But that really is a national story. You just said on your own newscast earlier that that Detroit now, that there's a bump up in the retail and the residential housing value in Detroit that's put, like, I think the story said, $2 billion more wealth in black people's pockets there. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. So if it goes that way, it can put money in pockets. We also know that it's gone the other way, it seems like Detroit, and robbed black people of that kind of money.
Yep. No, powerful point. To Baltimore and this bridge that we all know that collapsed and was hit by a freighter, there are people on the right politically suggesting that DE&I is the reason that bridge came down. The governor, Wes Moore, said, "I ain't got time for foolishness," but it's not just an indictment on DE&I. It's ultimately an indictment on architecture. But how do you read it, Lee? That crazy suggestion that DE&I is what brought that bridge down.
But they could never say how. Just because black folk are in charge, they blame it on us. But that shift is 987 feet long. So the skyscrapers we talked about, John Hancock Building especially, it's as long as those buildings are tall. And it's stacked to the brim. That kind of weight moving, hitting anything will rip it up. We could talk about, could there have been barriers? Could there have been this? But they were built to a standard when these bridges were. That was the standard. And ships weren't that big and heavy at the time. And now things change. But to blame it on black people, it's sad and then typical at the same time.
Nope, that's what happens. That is what happens. Shout out the name of your book one more time, Lee Bay.
Southern Exposure, The Overlooked Architecture of Chicago's South Side.
That's the name of Lee's book. I recommend that. Lee, I enjoyed this conversation immensely. I say all the time that I always leave this studio smarter every day when I walk out than I was when I came in. And I think at our best on this program, we try to expose people to a variety of things. I talk about so many different subject matter on any given day, on any given week. And I hope that in the process, we are, as I say all the time, making our audience the smartest person in their circle of friends. I've enjoyed this conversation about architecture in this hour, and I thank you for being the person that made it possible. All the best to you, my friend. Stay strong.
Thank you. You too. Thank you.
Good to have you on. More of Tavis Smiley when we come forward.